Iran denounces the European Parliament's resolution against the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, saying the force is the world's biggest anti-terror organization. The Iranian capital hosts the first international congress on influential women, bringing together participants from more than 90 countries. Also ahead, the French government defends its controversial pension reform despite strikes and protests against the plan. Good to have you with us. Our top story this hour: Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has denounced the European Parliament for its resolution against the country's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Nasser Kanani says the IRGC is the biggest anti-terror organization in the world. Kanani says Israel is the largest organized terrorist entity in the world, with the UK being its founder and the US its biggest supporter. The Iranian spokesman described all those three as the global club of terrorists. He said blacklisting the IRGC is because of their anger at the Iranian force. On Thursday, the European Parliament passed a resolution calling for the designation of the IRGC as a terror group. The Iranian army has also strongly condemned the move. It said the measure is a sign of desperation after enemies failed in their plans to support the recent riots in Iran. Meanwhile, the Iranian parliament has introduced a motion that will blacklist armed forces of EU countries as terrorist entities if the EU implements its resolution. We were earlier joined by journalist and political commentator Sayed Wasil Abbas. He explains why the West continues to take more anti-Iran measures.
It's because I haven't seen the British establishment starting to throw the toys out of the pram quite as robustly as they're doing at the moment. They seem to be very, very irritated at the failure, the latest failure of their regime change efforts. They seem to be taking it out on a lot of the Islamic centers or the centers linked to the Iran over here as well. So we're feeling the pressure even here. They have their pro-riot groups across the world who are all mobilized and remain mobilized, and they're supporting them in every way, shape and form as well. But what they're really upset about is that the IRGC consistently has successfully countered terrorism in the West Asian region. And as Mr. Ghani says, it's absolutely the case that all of that terrorism, and all, I mean all of that terrorism in West Asia, all of it can be taken back to either Whitehall or to the gates of Tel Aviv, or the gateways of Washington. This is just a plain and open fact. There is no doubting anybody who's worth anything in politics knows this to be the case.
Staying in Iran, the first International Congress on Influential Women has kicked off in the capital, Tehran, bringing participants from more than 90 countries. Women from different sectors are in attendance. They include actresses, academics, lawmakers, environment and civil rights activists, as well as healthcare workers, among many others. At the end of the gathering, three women regarded influential in the world will be awarded. On Thursday, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi met with some of the attendees. He said such events can pave the way for international cooperation in the future. The Iranian president praised the great role women have played throughout history. He also expressed hope that participants attending the Congress can benefit from Iran's experiences in upholding women's rights.
Tehran has hosted the first International Congress on Influential Women. The two-day event is underway in the Iranian capital with the participation of influential, active and elite women from almost 90 world countries. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi called on the participating women at the Congress to benefit from the experiences of the Islamic Republic of Iran with regard to women's rights.
We hope that the participants of this Congress, through cooperation and interaction, will be able to take necessary measures for the rights of women in the world and benefit from the experiences of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the field of protecting women's rights and paying special attention to women's role in the society. I hope this Congress will prepare the ground for further cooperation among countries in this field.
The event is aimed at identifying, supporting and developing the abilities and capabilities of elite and influential women at national and international level.
Women are suffering worldwide. This is just because we have not been together. And most importantly, this is the very first time for the Islamic country of Iran to host such a big occasion. So I am so happy to be here, and I hope the relationship with our sisters, women in the world, we should work hard, very strongly, and look forward to the international world to assist women than ever before.
It is extremely important to integrate women in the peace-building process. So this conference is extremely important because we know that we have a peace threatened in many parts of the world. And when we look for solutions, women should be involved.
Special awards with international recognition are slated to be granted to influential women in three fields of science and technology, economic and social affairs.
The Congress International of the Women, it's very important for the women in the Islam. For the development, the communication, the country, the for example, Algeria, the woman Algeria and the woman Iraq, and you take the relation very important because the Islam is number one.
The influential women have been selected from among housewives, women employees, female social activists, as well as competent women in digital technology, social media, science and technology, entrepreneurship, and those who are pioneers in areas of culture and charity affairs.
On the sidelines of the Congress, a memorandum of understanding was signed among Afghanistan's neighboring countries at the initiative of Iran's Vice President for Women and Family Affairs to help Afghan girls and women continue their education. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Turning elsewhere now, Japan is feeling the pinch of skyrocketing energy costs as official data shows consumer prices rose at a level not seen since December 1981. Japan's consumer prices rose 4% in December from a year earlier. The figure was also up by 0.3% compared with November. The increase in prices of telecommunication fees as well as a range of processed foods also contributed to the December acceleration. The figure is below record inflation rates in the US and Europe, yet it exceeds the inflation goal of 2% set by the Bank of Japan. The bank, however, has so far resisted calls to increase interest rates to tackle inflation. It says the price increases are temporary and linked to events like the Ukraine war and soaring energy prices. And France's finance minister has defended the government's pension reform plan that will increase the retirement age from 62 to 64.
We also strongly believe that this reform is a necessity for France. It's the best way of protecting our pension system. It's the best way of ensuring more prosperity for the French people.
The French economy is doing well. The minister also said the strikes over the pension reform are unlikely to hurt the French economy. That's because, he said, France has a very low inflation rate and is doing pretty well. On Thursday, the French people hit the streets across the country to protest the reforms that will also make it difficult to receive full pensions. Trade unions put the number of protesters at over 2 million. The rallies in the capital, Paris, turned violent with clashes between protesters and police. In the meantime, workers in different sectors went on strikes nationwide, halting trains and blocking refineries. New protests are planned for January 31. Moving on, Washington has announced a new package of military assistance for Kiev as the West continues to fan the flames of war in Ukraine. The U.S. Defense Department says the new package includes hundreds of armored vehicles, rockets and artillery shells valued at up to $2.5 billion. The U.S. says 59 Bradley fighting vehicles and 90 Stryker armored personnel carriers are included in the package. It also consists of ammunition for high-mobility artillery rocket systems and 8 Avenger air defense systems. The latest package brings total U.S. military assistance to Ukraine to more than $27.4 billion. Russia says the West's military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and increase the suffering of its people. Other Western countries have also pledged to provide Ukraine with more weapons. Our correspondent in Donetsk, Johnny Miller, tells us about that pledge, as well as Russia's stance over the arms deliveries.
And there seems to be an increasing split now, and this is very much a crucial point, I think, in terms of how far NATO and indeed how far particular specific countries are going to go in supporting Ukraine. The Americans say they're not going to give any of their, at the moment anyway, they're saying they're not going to give any of their Abrahams tanks. They say it's not logistically feasible to do so. The British, as I said, only giving a few tanks. And they're trying to, the British and the Americans are trying to pressure the Germans into giving their tanks. And the Germans have hundreds of Leopard tanks, and they've also sold hundreds of these tanks to other countries around Europe, which need German agreement to send them to Ukraine. Now, these hundreds of tanks could well have an effect on the battlefield, but at the moment, German politicians are standing back from that. So we may well be seeing a crucial moment in this split that has been going on in NATO for some time between the United States, Britain, Poland, the Baltic states, and Germany and France. And I think many people in Germany are starting to wonder, and politicians as well, not just people, starting to wonder whether continuing to give particularly heavy weapons to Ukraine is really in European interests. At the moment on the front lines, it's Russia very much on the ascendancy. And so when the Russians say that continuing to give weapons to Ukraine is only going to prolong the war, many people will agree with them.
Meanwhile, Russia's foreign minister has reiterated Moscow's readiness to discuss the war in Ukraine with Western countries. Sergei Lavrov, however, says Russia has yet to see any serious proposals for peace. He says peace talks need to address Russia's security concerns. Lavrov made those remarks in a press conference in Moscow. He said Washington has subjected Europe to its dictatorship in order to wage a war against Moscow.
Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov has held a press briefing to give an update on the ongoing war in Ukraine. In his press briefing, which was held in Moscow on Wednesday, Lavrov accused Ukraine's foreign policy of being under the dictation of Western nations. The Russian top diplomat further noted that Western nations have yet to make, quote, serious proposals to Russia on how the conflict should be resolved. Lavrov added that Russia was willing to support a draft truce proposed by Ukraine in late March, but the proposal was destroyed by Ukraine's Western supporters. He also said, in reality, the West decides for Ukraine what its foreign policy should be. Western officials have repeatedly claimed that arming Ukraine would help it achieve a better negotiation position and that no talks with Russia should take place before this happens. Lavrov further said Moscow would react to any serious proposal for overcoming the crisis that come from the US and its allies, but none has been sent so far. He also added that the West is using Ukraine to destroy the security system that existed in Euro-Atlantic for many years.
Now, the European Union is bracing to receive up to 4 million more Ukrainian refugees in 2023. That's according to a forecast by the International Center for Migration Policy Development. EU countries have already hosted millions of refugees from Ukraine since the ongoing war broke out there in February last year. The bloc has been facing criticism over its treatment of refugees from Ukraine and other countries. It has been accused of bias towards non-Ukrainians. The EU plans to deport a record number of asylum seekers deemed to be illegal immigrants in 2023. That's while no limits are applied on the number of Ukrainian refugees wishing to enter the bloc. Official data show that UK retail sales have contracted as high inflation hits the wallets of consumers. The Office for National Statistics says sales by volume dropped by 1% in December, at the time when people were expected to spend more money. It says December was the second month in a row that the British people cut back on their spending. Also, on a year-on-year basis, sales plunged by around 6% in December. British consumers are expected to keep tightening their belts in the current year as inflation remains close to a record high level. The country has faced a wave of protests and strikes in the past months over pay disputes as prices have soared. US President Joe Biden says he has no regrets about his handling of classified documents found at his home and former office.
As we found a handful of documents were filed in the wrong place. We immediately turned them over to the archives of the Justice Department. We're fully cooperating, looking forward to getting this resolved quickly. I think you're going to find there's nothing there. I have no regrets. I'm following what the lawyers have told me they want me to do. It's exactly what we're doing. There's no there there. Thank you.
And those were the first public comments by President Biden since last week. That's when a special counsel was named to investigate the matter. The documents have been found at Biden's home in Wilmington and a Washington, D.C. office he used before becoming president. The first set was discovered in early November, but news of the documents broke out on January 9. Biden and his advisers are facing criticism over why the White House has kept silent on the matter for so long. In September, Biden criticized his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump, for having classified documents at his Florida residence. And that brings an end to the International Bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4, 2023. Men have priority over women in capitalism. Therefore, you can see that women are abused in two ways in capitalism. One is in the workplace itself. This is an important point. Now, this woman who said she had lived in the West, she is probably well aware of these points. You can also find out about this in books and in places where there is information on general subjects. In many Western countries right now, the wages women receive are lower than what men receive for the same type of work. So they assign the same work that a man does to a woman and pay her less money, because she is weaker, because she is more vulnerable. That is how it is. This is a form of abuse. One of the reasons why the issue of women's freedom was raised in the 19th century and later in the 20th century, but mostly in the 19th century, was to pull women out of their homes and push them into factories where they could be used and given lower wages.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I would like to add something here. The same thing happened with regard to the freedom of black people in the America during American Civil War in 1860 AD. That is almost 160 years ago. In those civil wars that were going on for several years between the North and the South, over 1 million people were killed. In the aftermath of those wars, the issue of the freedom of slaves, the freedom of black slaves, was raised. There was agriculture in the South, and there were industries in the North. The South was the center of slaves. The slaves were mostly in the South, where they were used for farming. The people in the North needed cheap labor. They needed these black people. The controversy over freeing the slaves was initiated by the people in the North. If you have read the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was written about 200 years ago, it is about the same period in that time. They encouraged the black people to run away, and they would take them to the other side. Why? So that they could free them? No, it was because they needed cheap labor, cheap workers. It is the same method of deception used by the civilized gentlemen in the West when dealing with various issues. There are many other such examples and similar cases. Therefore, they have truly harmed women in this case when they brought her into the workplace so that they could lower their expenses and pay her less money.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Hit me. Please.
We the people.
Disease is no longer the number one cause of death for American children. Neither is road and automobile accidents. Since 2020, the number one cause of death for children in the United States has been gunfire. In 2022, more than 6,000 children were victims of gun violence. Two-thirds of 2021 child gun deaths in the U.S. were homicides, and most of those murders involved black children. Now, the number of children who died by suicide with a gun has also risen dramatically over the past decade. In 2021, 30% of child gun deaths was from suicides, which was committed mostly by white teenage boys.
Wild, Wild West.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I am your host, Daniel Arya. In today's episode, we'll discuss gun violence and how American children are increasingly being killed by guns, how Americans are obsessed with guns, the role of Hollywood and the gun lobby, and what the U.S. government is doing to curb gun violence. As usual, we are pleased to have our two guests on our show, Ryan Dawson, author and peace activist, and Judith Bellow, who is a senior member of the United National Anti-War Movement, joining us from Rochester. Stay tuned.
According to Gun Violence Archive, a nonprofit organization that tracks shooting incidents, more than 6,000 children have been killed or injured in the United States by gunfire in 2022. 5 days before the new year, the archive recorded that 6,023 U.S. children, 17 years old or younger, have been killed or injured over the year. These statistics top the 2021 total by more than 300 victims. 2022 saw more children die or injured by gunfire in a single year since the Gun Violence Archive started recording these incidents in 2014. Among these children, at least 306 children, 11 years old or younger, have died by gunshots in 2022, and another close to 1,400 children that have died were aged between 12 and 17.
The children killed by gunfire in 2022 include 19 students who are all 11 years old or younger, killed in the mass shooting in May at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. Now, disturbingly, one of the youngest killed by guns in 2022 was just a five-month-old baby, Cecilia Thomas, who was shot in the head while sitting in a car in Chicago during a drive-by shooting back in June. So what are your thoughts on the more than 6,000 children killed or injured by gunfire last year?
It's horrible, and that's really almost the entire Western Hemisphere suffers from that problem, whether it's the United States, Venezuela, Brazil, there's a lot of gun violence, and they all have different laws, and a lot of people like to put the blame on access to guns or lack of access to guns or sometimes a mixed scenario. For example, Chicago has outlawed guns, but it has the most shootings because anyone could easily buy a gun outside of Chicago, go into Chicago, and continue shooting. But it's not uniform across the United States. You don't have the same kind of gun violence in New Hampshire, let's say, as you do in Illinois or Louisiana. So there seems to be a more complex explanation for why there's so much gun violence other than because you can buy guns.
A more complex explanation. Now, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 3,597 children died by gunfire in 2021. Now, this is the highest death rate by guns in over 20 years. Two-thirds of these gun deaths, which is 2,279, were all homicides. Children homicides have seen an increase of more than 73% since 2018. And most homicides include black children, who are a minority among all American children, but are the majority of victims of gun violence. So what is the situation of gun violence in minority and African-American communities, ma'am?
Well, this is a big problem because our society is divided over what could be done to address the problems. So there are people who feel that taking the guns off the streets is a solution to the problem. And there are other people who are determined to keep guns available to pretty much anybody who wants one in this country. And unfortunately, the guns that are made available are high-power military guns, not just hunting guns. For instance, I don't think you'd want to hunt with a high-power machine gun. So we have a big problem here in our society with that division.
It also seems that more teenagers are turning to the gun to commit suicide. 30% of children dying with guns are from suicides. In 2021, 1,078 children committed suicide with guns. The majority of these children were white teenagers. 10 years ago, around 500 white children would kill themselves with guns annually. More recently, that number has passed 700. Black and Hispanic children are more likely to be killed by others, while whites are more likely to kill themselves.
Unfortunately, they all seem to blame gun violence on whatever it is they dislike for some other reason. And so some will blame gun violence on illegal immigrants because they don't like illegal immigration for other reasons. Some will blame it on, let's say, poverty. Because their pet issue is, about poverty and about wealth inequality. Some will blame it on SSRIs, the serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors that are used for antidepressants because they're against big pharma. And they might be correct. Any of those could be correct, but they seem to pick their conclusion first and then work backwards to fit the evidence to whatever their pet issue is, instead of looking at it holistically. Maybe all three of those things contribute to gun violence, but they're never really addressed. It's a lot of finger waving and a lot of hot air. Some people want to ban guns outright and go against the Second Amendment. And there isn't a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of shouting and my way or the highway, and that's why it never gets anywhere.
Researchers and experts tend to believe that it is difficult to explain why gun deaths has risen so dramatically over the recent years. However, most of them highlight the increased availability of guns and handguns that are usually stored less safely and are more frequently used in suicides and homicides to be a factor in the increase of gun deaths among children of the United States.
I think it's not safe to have a gun unless you're really good at using it. It probably creates more danger in your life than security. Americans, though, we have a culture of defiance. That's the only thing I can think of to explain it. So everybody, wants to be in a position to control their own environment, to control access to whatever they have. And there's not a lot of, the culture is broken. And I'm not sure it was always that way. Maybe it was. Maybe it's because our country is so young.
Now, black children, they comprise just 15% of American children, but almost half of all gun deaths and two-thirds of homicides that include child victims in 2021 are African-American children. Now, these figures have risen sharply, and matters have become worse for black children in recent years. Now, it is six times more likely for a black kid to be killed with a gun than it is for a white child.
According to Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization focusing on national health issues and the U.S. role in global health policy, while the number one cause of death of children in America is guns, gun deaths are not even among the top four causes of death in similar rich countries. Among these wealthy countries, where the U.S. child population accounts for 46% of the overall population, 97% of children's death by gunfire happens in the United States.
There are a number of people who just don't trust the police. But they might not be the biggest gun users. I think people who want a gun feel like they can't rely on a policeman to be there in their moment of need. And I don't think people really trust the legal system here very much either. We are a society, in my opinion, of distrust.
It shouldn't come as a surprise that when Americans own so many guns, child death by guns would also be high. According to the United Nations in 2018, there were 1 billion firearms that included 857 million in civilian hands. From this amount, 46% or 393 million are in the United States, which means that the gun in American civilian hands is more than the top 25 countries combined.
Well, that's rooted in a history, particularly after the American Civil War, where guns were confiscated and the North and Northern armies and carpetbaggers went to the South and basically looted mansions, raped and stole and murdered with impunity. And those that disobeyed the gun confiscation and could defend themselves were the ones who didn't get raped and robbed. And so they see it as self-defense, and they also see it as a check on the government itself. And for those of you that say, well, how could, you know, millions of people with guns ever stand up to the U.S. military, which has F-16s and tanks and so on? Well, we just saw the U.S. military lose in Afghanistan to little more than small arms fire, really. And so it does make a difference. So they see it as a check on government. It's not for hunting. It is for home defense, and the threat of it is also for home defense. But they also see it as they don't trust their own government. And who does trust the American government?
Now, despite the drastic rise in gun violence, gun ownership has increased in the U.S. in recent years. According to the Pew Research Center, gun sales have increased during the COVID pandemic. In 2021, 41% of all adults revealed that they either own a gun or someone in their household does. Now, in July of 2020, 44% more background checks on the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System was conducted for the purchase of a gun than it was in July 2019.
And we have a severe problem with gun violence in the inner city and in what I'll call the ghetto. African Americans who have more or less been left out of any progress that society has offered. And it's worse here partly because we used to have really booming companies that hired a lot of people, and they've died. And so there's a lot of competition for few resources. But at any rate, it is a problem. And it's beyond that, it's a problem that the people don't trust the police.
Now, experts and scholars that study a growing prevalence of firearms in Hollywood and on screen believe that the more guns that are in display in movies, the more it is likely that shootings will occur in the real world. Now that gun violence has increased dramatically in Hollywood movies and has tripled in rated PG-13 movies in the past 30 years, the trend of gun violence increase in the real world can also be witnessed.
When children grow up seeing, you know, on primetime TV and in the movies, all these heroes who run around basically killing people. That's what they do. And it's very, I think it distorts a child's view of the world. And he grows up to be a person with that distorted view. And it gives you a sense of insecurity for yourself, as well as making you more likely to want to have that power for yourself. And it's not hard to do. I think any teenager could probably get a gun online if they wanted to. So these are serious problems.
The rich gun lobby led by the National Rifle Association also plays a role in the horrific gun violence happening every day in America. Instead of trying to reduce guns in the hands of the people, the gun lobby actually tries to increase it. After each mass shooting at schools in America, the gun lobby advocates to arm the schools instead of disarming the public. Ironically, the lobby uses these tragedies to infuse fear in people and increase the sales of firearms and effectively adding to the problem.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, gun lobby is there for profit more than it is for some sort of ideology of protecting freedom. I mean, that's what they'll say. And it's not as if that isn't a reason at all, but it's mostly for profit. Some of the guns that are available are pretty ridiculous, but they just see it as a slippery slope, though, I think. They don't want to lose one magazine, one whatever widget to a gun, because they see that that's just an incremental attack on trying to get rid of guns in general. And they're probably right, because the other side is trying to get rid of the right to bear arms in general. And so it's kind of like two extremes. Both are wrong. One's necessary because of the other.
So instead of passing regulation to control guns and make it more difficult for individuals to own and carry firearms in light of mass shootings where the public becomes sensitive towards gun violence, the federal government in support of the gun lobby gives millions of dollars for arming school officers. This is while, according to the Washington Post, from 1999 to 2022, out of 225 incidents of gunfire in schools, there were only two cases that the school officer was able to stop it, and the deadliest school shootings all had armed officers present.
In the Wild West, they had six shooters. Nobody could walk in somewhere easily and kill like 15 people because there was plenty, you know, because they had limits on their weapons. But I do think that it's a problem that that's built into America's self-image. And actually, I'm going to correct you here. We're talking here about the United States, not about all of America. And I don't think any of this applies to most of Latin America. For instance, I think there are gangs and other problems. There are mafias and whatever. But I don't think they have this sort of prickly, I got to have a gun in my own hand kind of thing going on that's happening in the United States. And even in Canada, it's not as severe as here. There's just this whole Wild West mentality. And it feeds into white supremacy, unfortunately, because those are what the images were. And certainly when I was a child, you know, the bad guys in the media were always Indians. People grow up with a distorted sense of what's a normal way to think about yourself.
Now, with gunfire being the number one cause of death for American children in recent years and the increase of gun sales, there really doesn't seem to be a sensible solution for the gun violence problem in America today. The government and Congress are influenced tremendously by the gun lobby. People don't feel safe by the police and feel the need to protect themselves with guns. And it seems today that the problem is more like a cancer cell going untreated for years and has now taken over the entire body, where a treatment is no longer available. All right, everyone, now it's time to see what Abbas Montaghim has prepared for us this week.
Gun violence in America is an epidemic that is killing our youth every single year. It's estimated that more than 6,000 children have died of gunfire in the USA in 2022 alone. So the question is, how do we get to this point, and how do we create solutions to end the gun violence epidemic in America? On this episode of Power to the People, we will seek to answer these questions. First, as always, we gotta start with history. If we look at the history of this country, we know that gun violence is as American as apple pie. Guns were used by Europeans to conquer Africa and to enslave Africans. Guns were also used by these Euro-Americans to steal the land of the Americas from the indigenous people and set up a settler colony. These Europeans used guns to commit crimes against humanity and to develop the American nation into what we see today. In the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, it gives the right to keep and bear arms. This was a law used to protect the settler colony of America against slave insurrections. And the Second Amendment, it armed all settlers to protect the institution of slavery and thus the settler project of America and capitalism. So this is the foundation of why there are so many guns in America and why there's so many guns in the streets today. Now we must understand that America itself, it's a violent society, especially for the colonized. America, it maintains a colonial relationship between the settler colonizer and those who are colonized. Thus, it does everything in its power to keep the conditions in the colonies of the oppressed in dire situations. This means there's inadequate schools, poor housing, lack of social services, environmental racism, lack of job opportunities, and overall genocidal conditions. And you combine this with the strength and the power of America's media that celebrates and glorifies violence, then by default, you will have a society that is indoctrinated into believing that violence is part of everyday life. So this is why we can't act like gun violence in the black community and amongst colonized people is something that comes out of thin air, because it comes out of a particular history and a current system of genocidal violence. If we look at it all historically, which matters, history matters, one of the significant contemporary events that led to the mass amount of violence within the black community was when crack cocaine was put into the community. And yes, I said put. It is well known that the CIA put crack cocaine into the black community in order to fund the right-wing Contras in Nicaragua to fight the leftist Sandinistas that just came to power. And with crack now in the black community, which was a form of chemical warfare, it instantly expanded the already violent conditions. Black neighborhoods, they were flooded with crack cocaine, were already resource deprived, meaning there was a lack of economic opportunity and development. The sale of drugs, they quickly became the central mode of economics, and thus rivalries between different drug dealers happened, which led to increased gun violence. There's many reports of police departments and intelligence agencies also dropping off weapons in black communities throughout the country. And this was happening during the end of the Black Power Movement. And the Black Power Movement, it was a unifying force in the black community. And the American government, they saw the unity. They saw our unity, the unity of the colonized, as a threat to its national security, and thus used clandestine tactics to enact genocide. This is just some of the history. And if we want to end gun violence in our community, particularly with our youth, we have to become a material and spiritual force in our community, much like the Panthers were. And we must unify against the real enemy that creates these genocidal conditions, which is U.S. imperialism. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Aria. Do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
You are a true guide.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to The Last Savior. This is your host, Zainab. Well, today in our studio, we have with us Dr. Karimi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalamu rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Dr. Karimi, in our previous episode, you gave us a very much information about Sufyani, like about his names, about his titles, about the lineage he comes from, and about other things. But now we have certain narrations, as you said previously, which talk about his physical features. I would want you to explain that for us, like what about his physical features?
We talked about some of the features of Sufyani in some of the previous sessions. And as I mentioned, it seemed that people in the time of Sufyani will not have problem in recognizing Sufyani, who Sufyani is, because of the actions that he will do. Now, is there any narration talking about some of the physical features of him, like his face, for example, or how he looks like? Again, there are some narrations, but there is only one authentic narration that I will talk about that later. All the features that are mentioned in the narrations are as follows. Then I will refer to that authentic narration. Some narrations call him as Azraq, which means a bruised eyes. The other feature, physical feature for his face is that he is A'war. A'war means a person like a one-eyed man.
Okay.
The third is Wahsh al-Wajh, which means that he has a scary face.
Okay.
Next is Al-Ashqar. Al-Ashqar means a person with a red and white face, but the red is dominant over the white. And Ahmar is another, feature that is he's red. His face is,
okay.
is like a red
Redness,
person.
Dominant the color.
Exactly. And the other one is Jadri. Jadri means a person who is suffering from the disease known as smallpox.
Okay.
And the last one is Zakhim al-Hama, meaning that he has like a big head.
Okay.
For example, in this regard, let me just share one narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam, in which he says, يَخْرُجُ إِبْنُ آكِلَةِ الْأَكْبَاتِ مِنَ الْوَادِ الْيَابِسِ The son of Akilat al-Akbad, we said that this is referring to Hind,
yeah.
the wife of Abu Sufyan. He will come from the dried land, Al-Wad al-Yabis. And then the Imam says that he is Wahsh al-Wajh, he has a scary face, Zakhim al-Hama, he has a big head, Biwajhihi Atharun Jadri, he is suffering from smallpox, Idha Ra'aytahu Hasibtahu A'war. When you see him like a one-eyed man.
Okay.
This is in Kamal al-Din, page 651, chapter 57, hadith number 9.
All right.
Now, as I mentioned, these are all the points mentioned in the narrations as the physical features, especially for his face. But it seems that there is only one authentic narration in this regard, and it seems that we may just suffice with this one narration talking about how he looks like. And okay. I think it is sufficient for us in recognizing and realizing who Sufyani is.
Well, the features that we have named so far seem to be very, very scary.
Exactly.
And before I just need to take a deep breath, so we will take a short break. Now, listeners, stay tuned with us.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
Welcome back. You're listening to The Last Savior. We are talking about the Sufyani, and now we were talking about the physical features of Sufyani. Dr. Karimi, before going to the break, told us that he would be having bruised eyes. He's a one-eyed man. He has a scary face, and his skin color is red and white, where redness is dominant over the whiteness, and he is having smallpox, and he has a big head. And one of the narrations from Imam Ali alayhi salam also tells about these features, which are very scary. Now we will say, are these features really in Sufyani or not? Yes, Dr. Karim.
Yeah, many of these features are mentioned in that authentic narration that is quoted by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. The narration is quoted by Kamal al-Din, by Sheikh al-Sadur in his Kamal al-Din, page 651 in chapter 57, hadith number 10. He says that لو رأيت السفياني, when you see Sufyani, لرأيت أخبث الناس. You see that he is the most wicked of the people. Then the Imam refers to three features for his face: أشقر, أحمر, أزرق. And as I mentioned, it means that he is red and white. The mm-hmm. red is dominant over the white.
Yeah.
And Azraq is a person with bruised eyes. So okay. these are the features mentioned in this narration of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam.
Well, these have been the features of Sufyani, wherein we have one of the authentic narrations from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. You said that he said, when you will see him, you will realize that he's more one of the wicked persons, and in fact, the most wicked of the people. And his color is red and white, where redness dominates his skin color, and he has bruised eyes, which again looks like very scary. Anyways, crossing his physical features. Now, what about his religion? Because we had been saying that he will be against, he's an enemy, he's going to carry out genocide. Well, who could do that? Like, is he a Muslim or does he have some other religion?
When it comes to the narrations explaining the religion of Sufyani, there are a couple of narrations in this regard which again may contradict each other. But the point is that none of them has an authentic chain of the narration. Of course, I will share the narrations for okay. information of the dear listeners. But none of them is authentic, so we cannot come to a certain conclusion about his religion. But there is one certain point, and that is the fact that he is a great enemy to the Shia. There is no doubt about that. And he will try just to attack the lands of the Shia and to massacre the Shia. But referring to the narrations, although none of them are authentic, but just let me share the narrations. There are three groups of narrations about his religion.
Okay.
According to some narrations, he is a Christian.
Okay.